Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you from the English service of The Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clote in Washington, D.C.
And the living condition of the Liberian people continue to deteriorate under President Weah, as well as the issue of bad governance and economic failure.
The Vanguard Student Unification Party at the state-run University of Liberia plans a protest to coincide with the country's Independence Day on July 26.
From the opposition to government side, and that one makes him automatically lose confidence of the opposition party.
Norbert Mao, the leader of the Ugandan Opposition Democratic Party, says he will not step down.
Auditor General. Malawi has, since 2018, has not had the Auditor General because there have been a lot of technicalities within the system that has prevented government.
And Malawi's former information minister takes over as the new chairperson of Parliament's Public Accounts Committee. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. In Liberia, Vanguard Student Unification Party at the state-run University of Liberia has planned a protest to coincide with the country's Independence Day on July 26. Organizers say the protest, called Fix the Country Campaign, aims to pressure President George Weah to keep his promises and to solve the socio-economic challenges the country faces. The student group also expressed concern about reports of an increase in rape cases. They also called on the president to establish a court to deal with those responsible for gross human rights violations during the country's civil war. But supporters of the government dismissed the planned protest. They say the president and his team are doing their best to solve the challenges. This as the economy recovers from the COVID pandemic and from the global shocks due in part to Russia's invasion of Ukraine. For more about the planned protest, I reach Mustafa Kane. He is the chairman of the Vanguard Student Unification Party.
SUP has realized that the president of the state currently has not been able to fulfill most of his campaign promises to the Liberian people. And the living condition of the Liberian people continue to deteriorate under President Weah, as well as the issue of bad governance and economic failure. The issue of corruption is high on the increase based on the fact, such as the issue of rape and the issue of the consistent allotment of 30K by lawmakers unto themselves. SUP as an institution that continue to stand for the rights of the Liberian people decided to launch this Face the Country protest, or rather this campaign, in order to call the attention of the President of the Republic of Liberia, as well as international partners and stakeholders, so as Mr. Weah and his government can be able to address the major issues that are facing the Liberian people.
But staging this demonstration on the day or the Independence Day of Liberia, doesn't that pose a security threat, since there will be celebrations across the country? And that this protest could clash with security services, including the police?
The protest is not going to lead to anything violent, because we as an institution, over the past 50 years, we have staged a lot of demonstrations and a lot of protests and rally for our people, which has always been peaceful. SUP is one of the most peaceful institutions in this country since 1970. However, we are only intending to go in the street peacefully under the banner of the constitution of the country, which is guaranteed under Article 17 of the Liberian Constitution, which gave right to freedom of assembly, and Article 15 of the Constitution, which gave right to freedom of expression.
You talked about promises the president made while campaigning ahead of the elections, which you said he has yet to keep. But the whole global economy has been affected by shocks and the ongoing war in Ukraine. A lot of countries' economies have been also battered
by the COVID-19 disease. Don't you think the government deserves a little time to fix all these problems before meeting all these promises the president made ahead of the elections?
We have given President Weah a lot of time, enough space and time to address all of the promises he made to the Liberian people when he became president, especially on the issue of addressing major promises such as the war in economic ground court. You do not need the war in Ukraine or the COVID-19 to be able to address the issue of war in economic ground court. This president, in doing his campaign in 2017, promised the Liberian people that he was going to give justice to the over 250,000 Liberians who died during the Civil War. You do not need to wait for the issues in Ukraine and the coronavirus to address the issues of corruption.
Mustafa, what happens next after this protest concerning the awareness you want to raise about the prevailing economic conditions in Liberia? What happens next?
Well, after the protest, we hope that the government will listen to the part of the protester and to the part of the Student Unification Party. If this government is a sensitive government to the part of its citizens, and we expect that the government will listen, because we are going to use every means possible, every peaceful means possible, and every civic means possible to get the seat of government and to get the president and to get some of top officials and international stakeholders to listen to our plight. However, if the government refuses to listen to the Student Unification Party, well, the party has been a party of resistance. Two times we have spoken to this government for the last five years, through press releases, mass rallies, community engagement, and we have never ceased to keep the government feet to the fire, irrespective of whatsoever charge or whatsoever attack is meted against the Student Unification Party.
Mustafa Kane is the chairman of the Vanguard Student Unification Party. He spoke with me from the Liberian capital, Monrovia. In Uganda, Norbert Mao, the leader of the opposition Democratic Party, says he will not step down. This, despite calls by members of parliament of the group to do so. Their demands come after Mao signed a cooperation agreement with President Yoweri Museveni a day before he was designated and subsequently confirmed as the new Minister for Justice and Constitutional Affairs. The parliamentarians accuse him of betrayal of the top leadership and supporters of the opposition party. For more reaction to Norbert Mao's appointment as the new Justice and Constitutional Affairs Minister, I reached Lulume Baiga. He is a physician and a leading member of the Democratic Party in the Ugandan parliament.
Actually, it should have been automatic, because by becoming a minister, he takes an oath of the minister, an oath of allegiance, which carries with it secrecy and collective responsibility on part of the government he's going to serve. And being a minister carries with it responsibilities which cannot allow him to freely exercise his legitimate role as the president of the party in opposition, and also to answer the calls and the activities of the National Executive Committee, for which he's the chief spokesman, as well as chief executive. But on top of that, he's the take over of the responsibility of the minister. Carries with it generally crossing from the opposition to government side, and that one makes him automatically lose confidence of the opposition party.
Mr. Baiga, are you saying that Mr. Norbert Mao did not consult the top leadership of the party before deciding to sign a cooperation agreement with President Yoweri Museveni, which eventually led to his designation as the Minister for Justice and Constitutional Affairs?
The national leadership of the party, the topmost organ, is called the National Executive Committee, comprised of 38 members elected by the National Delegates Conference to transact party business from time to time, from day-to-day running of the party. And as party chair, as party president, he is supposed to execute the decisions of the National Executive Committee on behalf of the party. And such decisions, which include working together with a sitting government which we are opposed to, would have been debated by the National Council. The National Council is the parliament of the party, and it must make a resolution on anything passed to it by the National Executive Committee, which is a small body, to the parliament, which ratifies it, before it goes to be implemented. The National Council has never been called since the last Delegates Conference. Even the National Executive Committee has never met over this issue. Only him and a few people, including his Secretary General, Gerald Siranda. Therefore, that does not constitute the National Executive Committee, which is the body which must debate and pass decisions of that nature.
What is the next step of your party since he is refusing to step down, despite the repeated calls and accusations that he has betrayed your party?
The most important thing is that he has already excluded himself from the National Executive Committee, and therefore his position falls vacant, and there is no argument about that. You know, we don't need to force him to do anything but to fill the vacant position that was created by his abdication of the party's responsibility and carrying on the responsibility of the political party that we are competing against and which has been holding power for all this time. Therefore, he has chosen. You cannot eat your cake and have it, and that is common sense.
Some Ugandans are saying that despite the fact that you have ideological differences from the ruling National Resistance Movement, being called upon to serve to try to help build the country up should be paramount to everybody instead of ideological differences, which most people focus on, or which most opposition people focus on. How do you respond to that?
The Constitution of Uganda spells out how opposing parties can work together. And they can work together through a coalition. Corporations have never been spelled out. But if at all a corporation has been drafted in such a way that it conscripts even elected leaders to vote with the sitting government of which you opposed, then that one is a coalition in a corporation. And you dub it a corporation. But this is a job offer. And it is a job offer as described by the proponent himself. He was offered a job, an agreement was drafted by him, and the president of Uganda assented to it with a signature for political reasons. And that is what we think it is, for political reasons, and for him it was for personal reasons.
Lulume Baiga is a physician and a leading member of the Democratic Party in the Ugandan Parliament. He spoke with me from the capital, Kampala. South Africa's minister at the presidency says the government is implementing new measures, including infrastructural projects, to jumpstart the economy. Mondli Gungubele says the initiative to build back better after COVID is a move that will allow the government to partner with the private sector to help create job opportunities for the country's youth. Gungubele led South Africa's delegation to the United Nations High-Level Political Forum, which ended in New York last week. Officials say the conference aims to provide political leadership, guidance, and recommendations on the implementation of the UN's 2030 Agenda for Sustainable Development. In part two of the Skype interview, I asked Minister Mondli Gungubele about the major takeaways from the conference.
So let me ask you about the major takeaways of this high-profile or high-level political forum that just occurred, and your expectations and South Africa's participation and its significance.
The critical thing about the global family is that we are in an environment where the poorest and developing countries are interfacing with the developed countries. There's an opportunity here for commitment to sharing technological skill, for commitment to fund one another, and a commitment to ensure that we partner and secure strength we would not have if we're moving apart. So it's finance and technology. And amongst other things is that South Africa is a case in point, Peter. In the COP 26, five countries, that's in France, UK, Germany, Canada, and so on, those countries committed to allow South Africa to access 8.5 billion because they were impressed by the just transition framework that South Africa has adopted as a path towards a sustainable economy with the green economy at the back of South African mind. And they realized that South Africa appears committed to the green economy. And then against that background, they see South Africa as a sustainable partner because South Africa is beginning to think about the economy of the future.
Now, you gave remarks during the ministerial roundtable on accelerating achievement of the SDGs by 2030. What was your overall message?
The thing is, if I can use South Africa, Peter, 70% of the wealth of South Africa is in the hands of 20%. That already is a red flag. The issue of accelerating the SDGs becomes very critical. Because if you don't do that, the poor people, whatever dream you display, whatever dream you place before them, if currently as we speak, they have no access to water. Currently, as we speak, their children have got no access to education. Remember, education is the least poor people can have access to. If you don't have, they don't have access to education, they have access to water, they have access to sanitation now as we speak. To them, the issue of the long-term dreams of a global, prosperous world is a pipe dream. Now, immediately, if you do not take that into account, you lose them as partner in a medium and a long term. But if you make urgent the issue of ensuring that at least they have got access to water, access to sanitation, access to electricity, and they are able within their environment to be empowered through the social wage expenditure. If you do that, you secure them as companions for medium and a long term.
Before you go, Mr. Minister, how are South Africans reacting to the plans that you are implementing to build back better the economy impacted negatively by the COVID situation?
South Africans remain hopeful. But for them to increase or intensify their hope, they need now to see the results. Because when we came in 2019, we had indicators that they have not performed recently. So the challenge we have now, we are very happy, for instance, South Africa, the infrastructure build is beginning to unfold and the issue of water license is beginning to show up. And the Minister of Communication has actually released the spectrum. And these things very soon will actually show in the low cost of doing business, low cost of life and affordable data. Once they start seeing those things, we think the current minimum hope they have now, that hope will double.
Mondli Gungubele is South Africa's minister at the presidency. He spoke with me via Skype from New York. Malawi's former information minister has taken over as the new chairperson of Parliament's Public Accounts Committee. Mark Botoman is a leading member of the opposition Democratic Progressive Party, or DPP. Botomani says his committee will seek to ensure that government ministries departments and agencies are accountable and are using public resources responsibly. His election follows sharp divisions within the rank and file of the DPP in Parliament. This prompted the Speaker of the Legislature to express concern that the division is hampering the work of the lawmaking body. For reaction to his election and plans he has for the Parliamentary Public Accounts Committee, I reach Mark Botomani.
This is a committee of Parliament that basically scrutinizes the reports from the Auditor General. The Auditor General is the chief auditor of the Malawi government accounts. And so after scrutinizing or after working on the ministries, departments and agencies in terms of auditing, the audit reports are submitted to Public Accounts Committee of Parliament. So it is the responsibility of the Public Accounts Committee to scrutinize those reports. And if there are any issues in there, then the committee is mandated to summon those responsible, you know, officers in the ministries, department and agencies. So basically, in a nutshell, that is the what the committee is all about.
So, Mark, now that you are the chairperson of the Public Accounts Committee with this power, how do you intend using it?
Well, the powers of the chairperson of this committee are not used exclusively. I obviously report, will be reporting to the Speaker of the National Assembly. But in terms of discharging my duties, I obviously will be looking at what is outstanding at the moment. And the most key issue that is outstanding is the appointment of the Auditor General. Malawi has, since 2018, has not had the Auditor General, because there have been a lot of technicalities within the system that has prevented government to appoint a new Auditor General. So what we have now is the acting Auditor General. And a lot of things are suffering with regard to the powers that are, you know, that are supposed to be for the Auditor General. So I'll be working with the Ministry of Finance and, of course, the appointing authority in ensuring that the Auditor General is appointed. The second issue is about the outstanding audits that have been submitted to our committee. There are so many outstanding audit queries from the ministries, departments and agencies, which we need to follow up. And if we don't, then these are, you know, things that, you know, raise a lot of, you know, suspicions in terms of corruption and what have you. So I'll be working hand in hand with, you know, relevant stakeholders, together with my committee and, of course, the Speaker of National Assembly, whom we report to, in order for us to make sure that all this is done.
Last time, the Speaker of Parliament was expressing concern that apparent division within the rank and file membership of the DPP in Parliament is really undermining the work of Parliament. How do you intend to resolve this to ensure that the work of Parliament runs smoothly unhindered?
Well, no, the divisions in the party are being handled at a different platform altogether. There are no divisions in Parliament with regard to the opposition side. What we have the leader of opposition, who is our leader, or basically our party leader in Parliament, and we're working so well together with the other members. Dust has settled now. He's the one who actually fronted my name to the committee to be considered for election. And according to our standing orders, the Public Accounts Committee can only be chaired by a member of opposition side. And so our members there are five of us from the DPP. And among the five, my name was fronted, and I was unanimously elected by the membership of the committee. So I do not think that the apparent divisions that are rocking the party will affect the work of Parliament. The divisions, or whatever you call them, they are being handled at a different level, and I'm sure they'll be resolved as soon as possible.
Some protesters are calling for the resignation of President Chakwera, saying that he has not kept his promises and that the prevailing economic conditions are so bad that it's making life uncomfortable and unbearable for a lot of Malawians. What is your stance, and how do you respond to critics who are saying your party is behind these plots to use the back door to try to come back to power?
What I can say is that as a member of parliament and as an opposition MP, what I expect is that the president and indeed government to fulfill the promises that they made to Malawians and of course to make sure that they live up to their promises. So that's basically what I can say.
Mark Botomani is a leading member of the opposition Democratic Progressive Party, or DPP. He spoke with me from the Malawian capital, Lilongwe. This is the Voice of America, and you are listening to Nightline Africa. I'm your host, Peter Clote, in Washington. Coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa Sports with Samson O'Malley, and that will be followed by a commentary by Dr. James Jonah, former UN Undersecretary General for Political Affairs and Music, from our African collection. But first, female genital mutilation, or FGM, is the practice of circumcising young women for non-medical reasons. The act, which the World Health Organization calls a violation of the human rights of girls and women, is still common in many countries, mostly in Africa. Liberia is one such country. UN Women, the United Nations entity dedicated to gender equality and the empowerment of women, with support from the European Union, has introduced economic livelihood programs for traditional practitioners in an effort to eliminate female circumcision. For VOA, Rita Jlogbedue reports from the Liberian capital, Monrovia. Some of them have agreed to abolish the practice, but are also making extra demands for more support from the United Nations.
The National Council of Chiefs and Elders of Liberia, in collaboration with the Ministries of Internal Affairs and Gender, is suspending the practice until 2025. The resolution to temporarily end female circumcision was made during an FGM conference held in February in observance of the International Day of Zero Tolerance. More than 150 traditional leaders from 11 FGM practicing counties in Liberia who attended the conference unanimously signed a six-count policy statement suspending the practice for 3 years. The move is in line with the objectives of the UN Women's Spotlight Initiative to eliminate violence against the women and girls, including harmful cultural practices. To bring this about, UN Women is establishing vocational and heritage centers in 4 of Liberia's 11 counties where FGM is most common. The centers will focus on teaching new skills to young women and girls, and to traditional practitioners to replace the income they earn from providing circumcision. Osa Rekna, the Assistant Secretary General to the United Nations and Deputy Executive Director of UN Women, visited Liberia for the first time in June. She says her trip aimed at strengthening and reaffirming her organization's commitment to gender equality and women's empowerment in the country. As part of a mission, Ms. Rekna met separately with President George Weah and other high-profile government officials, traditional leaders, and some practitioners of FGM. At the end of her tour, she says, though the process is challenging, the country has made important strides in protecting the rights of women and girls over the past 2 decades.
Very notably, we see engagement to suspend and eliminate female genital mutilation in Liberia. And it's important to remember that we have international agreements against female genital mutilation, and therefore it is important to work towards elimination of any harmful practice on women and girls.
Monserrate is one of the counties noted for FGM, and is benefiting from the Alternative Economic Livelihood Programs by UN Women. Traditional practitioners in the area say they have abolished the act since the intervention of the group.
Our OP, we not let that thing again. We not move our hand from inside. I tell you, the other people there, they stand up there, that is move their hand from inside. Nothing inside.
Meanwhile, Masa Kandaka, the head of over 300 FGM practitioners in Monserrate County, says she, along with her women, have fulfilled their part of the bargain with the UN group. Masa says the organization should uphold the agreement by continually supporting them with, for example, monthly salaries, access to cell phone networks, fish ponds, and processors for making farina or flour from cassava and potatoes.
You can't tell somebody what boy that thing, say the mom, you just support them with small money. No, you can't do that. The white people say, what they can do for photo tennis, they say, it can't be easy. So when they say, we need support from them, but when they're not supporting, I don't know what's up.
UN agencies are working to eradicate FGM by 2030 as part of the organization's sustainable development goals. However, the agreement with Liberia's counties that practice FGM expires in 2025. The procedure could then return until a law is passed to eliminate female circumcision for good. Rita Ajrabweduo for VOA News in Monrovia, Liberia.
It's now time for Nightline Africa Sports, and for that, let's join Samson O'Malley. Hello, Samson.
Hi, Peter, and good evening, sports fans. Welcome to Nightline Africa Sports. We begin with the Women's African Cup of Nations in Morocco, where Banyana Banyana of South Africa were crowned champions for the first time on Saturday night after defeating host Morocco 2-1 in Rabat. Hilda Magaya scored twice in the space of 8 minutes in the second half after the RMAC to hand South Africa a first-ever Women's African Cup of Nations title. It ended a run of five finals without success for Banyana Banyana, who completed the tournament in Morocco with a 100% record, as well as securing qualification to next year's Women's World Cup in Australia and New Zealand. Desiree Ellis, coach of Banyana Banyana, said it was a hard-fought victory.
We kept complete control of the game, could have had one or two more. I felt we conceded poorly, a little bit complacency, but we stuck out. We stuck out and we fought till the bitter end. All glory to God. But I take my hat off to the whole team. They're absolutely magnificent. They stuck to the game plan. They didn't allow them to play. And when they did get behind us, the defense was magnificent.
Captain Refiole Jean and Jermaine Sepusimwe, who shared their thoughts on winning their first African Cup of Nations, described their feelings as one of a lifetime.
I'm overly excited, overly grateful. It's been a long journey for us to get to where we are today. And above everything else, we just want to thank the Almighty for the strength. You know, it wasn't easy throughout the years trying to get to where we are. You know, Coach Des always emphasizes the importance of teamwork. And I think since day one, we always worked on it, on and off the field. This is the best camp we've had in a long time, where we just wanted to do it for one another. We put individualism on the side and just focused on teamwork. And I think that's what got us to where we are today.
In athletics, Kenya's Olympic champion Emmanuel Kurie ran a textbook tactical race to win the world 800 meters title on Saturday in Eugene at the World Athletics Championships. He won in 1 minute 43.71 seconds, with Algerian Jamel Sedati producing a stunning finish of his own to take a surprise silver in 1 minute 44.14 seconds ahead of Canada's Ariob, who got bronze in a time of 1 minute 44.28 seconds. Kurie said the race was unpredictable, but was glad he picked the gold medal for Kenya and himself after a very difficult season.
This race, the 800 meter, is the toughest one. To be honest, even if you have your own calculations, it might never work. I failed many times since 2017 in the London World Championships, 2019 indoor. I doubled and I messed up. Now I'm here again. I failed many races and I know how to do it. And I know how to run with the good guys in this event. So I'm confident, and maybe going forward to the Birmingham, we are expecting something better.
And on to boxing, where Ghanaian boxer Isaac Dubois fended off an ever-aggressive Juet Gonzalez on Saturday night to end a featherweight title shot. The former WBO junior featherweight champion won a 10-round split decision at the Grand Casino Hinkley in Hinkley, Minnesota. Ghana's Dubois won their 126-pound match 96-94 on the scorecards of judges Tim Chittam and Mike Fisgland. Judge Patrick Morley scored Gonzalez a 96-94 winner. In his ringside interview, Dubois gave credits to his opponent for putting up a good fight.
He's a true warrior. And, you know, his team, they put tremendous, they prepared him really well. Every now and then, you know what, I kind of like get ahead of myself. You know, that thing within me just wants to just stand there and fight. But, you know, like I said, I'm learning the art of boxing. You know, I'm learning that it doesn't, every punch doesn't have to be a hard punch.
And that's it for this week's edition of Nightline Africa Sports. Back to you, Peter.
Thanks a lot, Samson. It's always a pleasure to hear from you. We'll link up with you again next Sunday for another look at African sports. Nightline Africa Sports. Now let's take a closer look at Africa, the problems, the prospect in time of conflict, in time of peace. Here's one man's point of view with Dr. James Jonah, former UN Under-Secretary General for Political Affairs. Hello, Dr. Jonah.
Good evening, Africa. Once again, the people of the Sudan, particularly the youth, are sadly being killed in major confrontations with the military. Both sides, the military and the civilians, are engaged in a titanic struggle to determine the future development of the Sudan. In an earlier phase of the struggle, the military joined civilian protests to oust the Bashir regime. Then followed difficult negotiations that produced a transition government composed of the military and civilians. But with the passage of time, it developed that there was a deep distrust between the military and the civilians, and the military finally took over with the retreat of the civilians. We are now in that stage. The current protests in the Sudan are demanding that the military should return to the barracks and that some military officers should be prosecuted for the killing of civilians. At the same time, there is clear evidence that the military is digging their heels and they are not prepared to give way to the civilian protests. This shows there's an impasse and there are no easy solutions available at the moment. In this situation, the African Union may want to consider an arrangement that may involve the League of Arab States and the Islamic Conference. These three institutions should decide on a tripartite initiative that will involve consultations with the people of the Sudan on a broad basis, different regions, not only those in the capitals or major cities. They should receive support first from the protesters and from the military to conduct such consultations. And they should also ask for ceasefire while they move. The purpose of these consultations will be to obtain agreement on a consultative conference. And that conference should be able to determine, one, how to move to elections for a civilian government. Secondly, they should determine a brief period for the transition. And thirdly, on the electoral process for such civilian elections. In this instance, the United Nations may be able to assist and to follow the procedure they did when Namibia was conceding its independence. The agreement should be reached that for the time being, the military will remain in the transition, a brief one, to be agreed, and also to limit the range of its decision-making in that transition. This seems to be the only way that one can break the impasse. It is not likely that an agreement will be reached with the military for an immediate transition from protest to a civilian rule. As we have seen last Friday in Libya, when Libyan youths became so frustrated that they stormed the parliamentary in Tobruk and in other cities for the long, winding negotiations involving the United Nations and others for elections in Libya. It is not easy to determine who should participate in elections. So this consultative group in the Sudan will be able to assist if an agreement is reached. And it should also be known that the transition government will consult regularly with such a consultative group until elections are held. This may not be a panacea for the situation in the Sudan, but for the time being, it seems to be one possibility. I thank you.
That was One Man's Point of View, a commentary by Dr. James Jonah, former UN Undersecretary General for Political Affairs.
Brown skin girl, your skin just like pearls, the best thing in the world.
It's Sunday on Nightline Africa, and this is the time we get to relax and reflect, a flashback with music from the continent.
The best thing in the world.
I never charge you for anybody else singing.
She says she really grew up poor like me. Don't believe in nothing but the Almighty. Just a little jeans and a pure whitey. She never dreamed forever be nobody wifey. Yeah. She wanna be not pretty, but your heart is a mess. Play you like a villain, cause she caught in a way. Tonight I am walking away. 9 to 5, mine and I grind. Yeah, yeah. Tonight I might fall in love. Depending on how you hold me. I'm glad that I'm calming down. Can't let no one come control me. Keep dancing and call it love. She fights it by falling slowly. If ever you are in doubt, remember what mama told me. Brown skin girl, your skin just like pearls. You're back against the world. I never tried you for anybody else. A brown skin girl, your skin just like pearls. The best thing in all the world. I never tried you for anybody else.
Trophy when Naomi's walking. She need an Oscar for that pretty dark skin. Pretty like Lupita when the camera's closing. Trip broke 11 when my Kelly's rolling.
I think tonight she might break her brave. Melanin too dark to throw her shade.
She minds her business and winds her ways.
Roll like 24K.
Okay.
Tonight I might fall in love. Depending on how you hold me. I'm glad that I'm calming down. Let no one come control me. Keep dancing and call it love. She fighting but falling slowly. If ever you are in doubt, remember what mama told me. Brown skin girl, your skin just like pearls. You're back against the world. I never tried you for anybody else. A brown skin girl, your skin just like pearls. The best thing about the world.
Have you looked in the mirror lately? Wish you could trade eyes with me. There's complexities in complexion, but your skin is glow like diamonds.
Dig me like the earth, you be giving birth to everything alive, baby, know your worth.
I love everything about you, from your nappy curls to every single curve, your body natural.
Same skin that was broken, me the same skin taking over. Most things out of focus. When you're in the room, they notice you.
Cause you're beautiful. Ooh. Yeah, you're beautiful. Ooh.
Them and them gon' fall in love with you and all of your glory. Your skin is not only dark, it shines and it tells your story. Keep dancing, they can't control.
Are the words of my mother as I'm getting old.
even now I remember. So I'm packing all my tools, I'm going back at home. A young girl like me shouldn't be caught with an old school fool. He told me he was a banker, not knowing bank robber. This man is a gangster, bukum banku boxer. Oh sorry, I know pa, but I'm bobo down boy. If you where we are, shock and a gun don't go. Now it beats me every night and day. My mission is to want me, but I didn't wanna know. My mission, my mission. Picking up the here, mama. Picking up the here, papa. And then quada yaba. Social media nada. Better than I a ball, papa. Better than I a yon dopa. Nancy Wakodana would be a wokotania, who say a boy. He told me he was a banker. No, no, when bank robber. This man is a gangster. Bukum bankum boxer. I'm sorry, I know pa. But I'm bobo dambo. A dream we are, stuck on the ganja and now it beats me, every night and day. My mission is to want me, but I didn't want to know. My mission, my mission, my mission, my mission, my mission, my mission. One day you will know, these are the words of my mother. As I'm getting old, even now I remember. So I'm packing all my tools, I'm going back at home. A young girl like me shouldn't be caught with an old school fool. He told me he was a banker, not knowing bank robber. This man is a gangster, bukum bankum boxer. Now he beats me every night and day. My mission is to want me, but I didn't wanna know. My mission, my mission, my mission, my mission, my mission, my mission.
Senegal, I don't know.
Malika bole kolido, suno fana sikile. Uraja kekele sikido, nasongo bongodo. Logo nyinike wama jano, kafero bobo wodo. Katilino muro toto toto, facho.
Was our Sunday music spot. Hope you enjoy the music from Nightline Africa here, the English service of the Voice of America in Washington. Nightline Africa comes to you from the English service of the Voice of America. Hope you enjoy the program tonight. As you know by now, we're on air on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC. From the Nightline Africa team, including producer Nadia Taha, we say thanks for joining us. And remember, as the elders say, no lasting glory is won without struggle. I'm your host, Peter Clote, in Washington. Good evening, Africa.